Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 1.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vyasa Uvacha Iti Samprashna Samrishto Vipranamro Maharshani Pati Puja Vachaste Sam Pravaktum Upachakrame.
Translation. Ugashrava Sita Goswami, the son of Romaharshana, being fully satisfied by the perfect questions of the Brahmanas, thanked them and thus attempted to reply. Purport. The sages of Naimisharanya asked Suta Goswami 6 questions, and so he is answering them one by one.
Omigyanitimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam. Pancha kaupa taru bhyascha kripa sindhu bhayevacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So the first chapter was entitled Questions and questions by the sages, and this chapter is called Divinity and Divine Service, which is the subject matter of the answers to those questions. So if we can remember back to the first chapter, the first thing we remember is the prelude of Vyasadeva, which introduces the subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam and describes the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Those beautiful verses were presented by Vyasadeva, explaining how the Srimad Bhagavatam is the superior literature and the topmost scripture. And then he begins to relate at Naimisharanya, when the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken at the beginning of Kali Yuga. If you remember the scene, we have the sages assembled at Naimisharanya, as Srila Prabhupada explained. If the universe is like a great wheel, the hub of that wheel is Naimisharanya, and sacrifices performed at Naimisharanya have the potency to counteract demoniac influences, and therefore all the great sages of the world are assembled there for the purpose of counteracting the influences of Kali Yuga, which are demoniac. And therefore, to save the people of Kali Yuga, they ask six questions. As Borijan Prabhu explained, that sacrifice is the mark of a sage, and it's what makes one a sage. So we have the vision of these great sages who are sacrificed, not just sacrificed for their own personal spiritual development, but their sacrifice is actually for the benefit of others. There's verses like that. I used to remember the verses by Prahlad Maharaj. You know, for me, I have no problem because my mind is completely fixed in Krishna consciousness. But I only have one suffering, and that's the suffering I feel when I see the suffering of others. So that's actually the mark of the sage. When Raghunath Das Goswami, in the beginning of one of his books or poems, he offers prayers to his various spiritual masters, and when he offers his prayers to Sanatan Goswami, he says, Vairagya Yug Bhakti Rasam Priyatnaya Apayamam Anubipsam Andam Kripambudhir Ya Paraduka Duki Sanatanastam Prabham Asrayami. I take shelter of Sanatan Goswami Kripambudhir, because he's an ocean of mercy. Kripambudhir Ya Paraduka Duki. His suffering is only for the suffering of others. So this is actually the nature of a sage. Because ultimately a sage is only interested in the will of Krishna. And the will of Krishna in this material world is that people become purified and go back to Godhead. That's why Krishna himself appears in this world. Yada yadahi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Wherever and whenever there is a decline in dharma, in religion, in duty, in the activities that bring us closer to full surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself appears. So that's Krishna's purpose for coming to the world. And therefore, that is also a real saintly person or a great sage's purpose of being in this world. It is for others. So we have that nice scene of the sages, and they ask six questions for the benefit of others. What is the ultimate and absolute good? We can review them. What is the essence of the scriptures? So that people can actually become satisfied. So people can actually become satisfied. Not satisfied in a selfish way, but satisfied in the sense that it's a sign of health, sign that they're situated properly, that they're acting correctly. And therefore they're satisfied. And that's why Srila Prabhupada discussed in one of the purports that these scriptures teach one how to become satisfied. So the third question was, for what purpose did Krishna appear? And then there's two questions about the incarnations. Describe Krishna's incarnations in creating this world. And then describe Krishna's incarnations in entering into this world, performing his pastimes. The purpose is the same, because the material world is created. Prabhupada sometimes describes it as the mystery of creation. What is the mystery of creation? The mystery of creation is that the material universes expand for the purpose of giving the conditioned souls a chance to become purified in Krishna conscious. That's the purpose of the creation. And similarly, the purpose of Krishna entering into the world in his different lila avatars is to attract people to their original position as Krishna's servants. Because when you hear his pastimes, Krishna is all attractive, then you naturally want to serve him. And then the last question is, now that Krishna has left the planet, where is knowledge and religion presently residing? Where is all good qualities, knowledge, religion, renunciation, where are all these things residing? Of course, the answer to that question will come at the end of the third chapter. It's the Srimad Bhagavatam. And if you actually see all the answers to all the questions, they're all leading to the Srimad Bhagavatam. What is the essence of the scriptures? The essence of the scriptures is devotional service based on chanting and hearing. Therefore, later in this chapter, it'll say, Dharma sunushtita pumsa viviksena katasya napariye yadi ritim shrama evahi kevalam. If religious activities don't lead to an attraction for the Supreme Lord, then those activities are actually useless. So the absolute and ultimate good is devotional service based on chanting and hearing. For what purpose? Did the incarnations, describing the incarnations, that's the Srimad Bhagavatam. So these six questions were asked, and now they're going to be answered. But before Suta Goswami begins to answer the questions, he thanks. He's fully satisfied, and he thanks the sages of Namasharanya Pratipuja. He worships them. He thanks them. He's grateful. Because the questions are samprashna. They're perfect inquiries. Because they're inquiries about reality. They're relevant inquiries. Because they're inquiries that can actually lead to perfection. They're samprashna. They're perfect questions. In the second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, we discussed that the highest truth is described in the Bhagavatam as vastavam atra vastu. It's factual knowledge of the reality. And what is the reality? The reality is that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and everything is his energies. So they're actually asking questions about the ultimate reality, and therefore their position with, therefore their, about self-realization. I give that example when His Holiness Jayadvaita Swami was at the Rath Yatra in New York, in the questions and answer booth. He asked a question and he was actually challenging everybody, and it went on for hours and hours. What can be more important than self-realization? What can be more important than understanding the self? How can one be actually satisfied without understanding who he is? Before you know before you know the right thing to do, you have to know what you are. Before you know your duty, you have to know the purpose of your existence. The purpose of your existence is based on what you are. So what can be more important than reality? Vastavam atra vastu. What can be more important than questions about what is real? What is reality? What can be more important than that? Therefore, later in the Bhagavatam, it'll discuss the, in this chapter also, it will discuss what is the purpose of material gain? Well, the purpose of material gain is self-preservation. For what purpose? Jivasya tattva jigyasa. To understand tattva. To understand tattva. Tattva means what is. To understand what is, so that one can know what to do. So that one can actually become satisfied, which is a symptom of the healthy state. The healthy state is when everything is right. So, therefore, these are some prashna. These are perfect inquiries. And therefore, some rishta, he's perfectly satisfied by these inquiries. And therefore, pratipuja, he thanks them. We'll see this in other places of the Srimad Bhagavatam also. How thankful one is when someone gives him an opportunity to speak about Krishna by sincere inquiries. In the very beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or the beginning when Sukadeva Goswami speaks to Maharaj Prickett. Maharaj Prickett, he asked questions because he was cursed to die. What is the duty of a man who's about to die and what should he not do? Now the question that is, the meaning of a question depends on who's asking that question. And this is Maharaj Prickett, who is a great devotee from birth. He's related, he's the grandson of Arjuna. So he's naturally a devotee of Krishna. So the question he asked, what is the duty of a man who's about to die? What is dharma? Same question. What is the duty? What is dharma? Same question they asked. What is the essence of the scripture? What is the duty of a man to die, about to die, and what should he not do? So Sukadeva Goswami, before speaking the Bhagavatam to him, replied, Vriyan Esha Te Prashna. Vriyan means great, glorious. Your question is glorious. Krita Loka Hita Nipa. Because Krita, it does, Loka Hita. Hita means welfare work or good. Because it does good, nipa, for every man. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada discusses that Krishna Katha is like the Ganga. Wherever the Ganga flows, there's bhukti, material opulence, and mukti, liberation. So Prabhupada said, wherever there's Krishna Katha, everything becomes perfect. Everyone is satisfied. The speaker, the inquirer, the place, everything becomes satisfied. So he was so happy. He was so happy. Because when someone asks a question of Krishna, about Krishna, immediately you think of Krishna. Later in the Bhagavatam, when Narada Muni begins asking questions to Lord Brahma about the creation. He has a doubt. Lord Brahma is his father. First, he's thinking that Brahma is the Supreme Lord because of his apparently self-sufficient nature, his great position, so inconceivably powerful. But then when he sees that his father is performing austerities and therefore is getting his powers outside of himself, and he sees that he's apparently not self-sufficient because you only perform austerities because there's some deficiency in you, and therefore you want to get some power or or knowledge or something else beyond yourself. Then he doubts and he says, I doubt whether actually you're God. Who is God? And Lord Brahma thanks him. He said, this is very wonderful. I'm indebted to you because you're giving me a chance to speak about Krishna. And Prabhupada said that's the basic missionary principle. The gratitude one feels when someone shows receptivity to Krishna consciousness and allows you, therefore, to speak about Krishna. Okay, we'll go on to text 2.
Suta uvacha yam prabhajantam anupetam apetakrityam dvaipayano virahakatara ajuhava putreti tan mayataya taravo bane dhus tam sarva bhuta ridayam unim anatosmi.
Srila Sutta Goswami said, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that great sage, Sukadeva Goswami, who can enter the hearts of all. When he went away to take up the renounced order of life, sannyas, leaving home without undergoing reformation by the sacred thread or the ceremonies observed by the higher castes, his father Vyasadeva, fearing separation from him, cried out, O my son! Indeed, only the trees, which were absorbed in the same feelings of separation, echoed in response to the bereaved father. So, the first thing that Sutta Goswami does before beginning to answer the questions of the sages of Namasharanya is offer his obeisances to his spiritual master who heard the Bhagavatam from Srila Vyasadeva. So we can see that speaking and understanding the Srimad Bhagavatam is not just an intellectual process. It was an intellectual process, then he would speak, just figuring it out with his own brain. He would speak based on what he's already heard. But both to learn the Srimad Bhagavatam and speak the Srimad Bhagavatam, one must sarvasya chaham hiri sannivishto matasmitir gyanam apoanam. Krishna says, I am residing in everyone's heart. And for me comes remembrance, knowledge, forgetfulness. So we are always dependent on Krishna. And that and when we're dependent on Krishna, we have great capability. When we actually put ourselves in the position of instrument of Krishna, then Krishna can act through us and Krishna can speak through us. Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva never thought, he never took credit for speaking the Bhagavatam. Therefore, in the second verse, again in the first chapter, when he said, Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni, it was spoken by the great sage Mahamuni. Vyasadeva was known as Mahamuni, but he wasn't saying that in an egotistical way. Rather, he was thinking that it's actually Krishna who is Mahamuni. And even though the Srimad Bhagavatam came from his mouth, he felt Krishna was speaking it. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada used to listen to his own purports and relish them. He would sometimes like to hear his own purports and relish them. But not in the sense that I spoke them. He never felt that I spoke the Bhagavatam. He felt that the Srimad Bhagavatam manifested through him. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada never was proud, even though there was so much accomplishment in the Krishna consciousness movement. He gave all credit to Krishna, and he gave all credit to his spiritual master. When he came to America, and he saw the task before him, that he had to spread Krishna consciousness, and everyone was in passion and ignorance, and how would he be able to inject within them some desire to become Krishna conscious, and how would he get them to understand Krishna consciousness? He said, I'm just like a puppet. Make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. So for the Srimad Bhagavatam to manifest, which is non different than Krishna, one has to be the proper instrument. And that begins with a sense of service and humility. So therefore, before speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam and before hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, one must offer respectful obeisances to his spiritual master, so that knowledge actually manifests through his heart. Any speaker has this experience when he's preaching, and we all preach, that it's not just us speaking, it's not just intellectual, but actually Krishna speaks through us. So we never should feel, I made a devotee. I made him a devotee. Krishna made him a devotee. And somehow he used you as an instrument. So the more we are actually surrendered to Krishna in a humble way and submissive to Krishna's will, the more he can work through us. And what to speak of understanding the absolute truth. So throughout the Bhagavatam, we'll always be reminded of the what we call the Abhideya Tattva, the truth about how we can actually, what is the practice to actually achieve the goal of life? What is the practice? And what is our role? So we'll see always. Even he's offering obeisances to Sukadeva Goswami. But when Sukadeva Goswami was asked by Maharaj Prickett to describe the process of creation, which is manifest by Krishna's shaktis. It's manifest by Krishna's own will. So it's actually inconceivable to us how Krishna creates the world. It's inconceivable. So when he was to answer that question, Sukadeva Goswami immediately began to offer so many prayers. And in those prayers, he would express that the power of the devotee is the power of God. It's not his power. We have to be empowered. We have to be empowered to speak about Krishna, to represent Krishna. There's one verse that Srila Prabhupada uses in the purport. He uses that verse in the purport to show how Brahmanism is included within Vaishnavism. But that verse was used by Sukadeva Goswami to show how to actually be able, you know, he was praying for the power to, he kept on using the statement, please decorate my statements. Many times in many verses, this is in the second canto, please decorate my statements. And he gave one verse, which Prabhupada refers to here, and Kirata Hunanda Pulinda Pulkasa Ambira Shimbaya Vanakashadaya Yenyecha Papa Yadapasraya Sraya Shudyante Shudyante Tasmai Prabhavishnave Namaha. These are a list of all low class people. People from low Pulinda, Greek, Yavana, Turk, Khasa, Chinese, Huna, East German. It's all people from the world, from low birth, but how they can also become pure devotees. How? Tasma, Shudyanti Tasmai Prabha Vishnave Namaha. By Prabha Vishnave, by the Prabhav, by the power of Vishnu. By the power of God. And therefore his statement was, is if you can empower them to be Krishna conscious, then please, you empower me to speak. So this is our understanding of the proper method of receiving and disseminating knowledge. Always must be a sense of humility and prayer. Now in this verse, he's glorifying Sukadeva Goswami. The Prabhupada's purport mainly deals with the fact that Sukadeva Goswami was a born a Vaishnava, and therefore Brahmanism was included in him. As Prabhupada says, the Vaishnava stage is the postgraduate status of Brahmana. A progressive Brahmana must necessarily become a Vaishnava, for a Vaishnava is a self-realized learned Brahmin. Sukadeva Goswami was a Vaishnava from the beginning, therefore there was no need for him to undergo all the processes of the Vanashram institution. Ultimately, the aim of Vanashram is to turn a crude man into a pure devotee of the Lord. So all the reformatory processes are to purify one. But if you're already purified, then what's the necessity of the purificatory processes? Therefore, it says, anupetam, without being reformed by the sacred thread, apeta krityam, not undergoing ceremonies and prescribed duties. There was no necessary for purificatory processes when he was a Vaishnava, which is the perfected state of the living entity. As Prabhupada said, I'll probably quote it 100 times. The perfected state of the living entity is called a devotee. So he's actually, in one sense, he was in the perfected state. And certainly he was Atmaramas Chamunayo Nigranant Yap Ukrame. He was completely detached from this world. So he glorifies him that he was born a Vaishnava. He was the perfected state. Therefore, he left immediately. He didn't have to perform any prescribed duties. He was already qualified for sannyas, which means to give up all your prescribed duties and just renounce the world. And even though he was 16 years in the womb of his mother, and then he came out, and then he left immediately. He left immediately, and his father was feeling separation from him. Actually, he wanted to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam to him. So he left immediately, and then all that he heard was the reply of the trees. So this actually, and Prabhupada said, only the trees which were absorbed in the same feelings of separation. So he was so pure. He was so pure that not only his father was feeling separation, but even the trees were feeling separation. And therefore Jiva Goswami describes that the echo was not just the voice of Vyasadeva reverberating off the trees, but it was actually the trees themselves. And he also, Jiva Goswami describes in the purport, it was also Krishna manifesting through the trees his own devotion and separation from his devotee. And Sukadeva Goswami, you know, and eventually the way he was called back, is the disciples of Vyasadeva in the forest chanting the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he heard the Srimad Bhagavatam and he followed them back to the ashram. There was 4 verses that were described. Tavakatam ratam tapta jivanam. Different verses. Jayatite dakam. 4 verses. one verse by Lord Brahma describing Krishna going out into the forest with his beautiful peacock feather and holding his flute. Another verse describing Krishna's mercy that even though Putana approached him with deadly poison on her breast to kill him, Krishna gave Putana the same destination as his mother because he accepted her service as nurse. Even though there was so much motive with it, still Krishna so mercifully accepted our service. Any questions so far?
Just one. I'm noticing that Shukadeva Goswami was liberated in the womb of his mother, even at that time. So he doesn't have material consciousness. His birth is just Krishna's will.
There's a longer story how he was Radharani's parrot. See, he's a liberated soul. Just like Krishna is not appearing by karma, janma karma chame divyam. His janma, his birth, and his karma, his activities are divyam. They're not caused by his own previous activities. We described before that karma means to take a birth. Karma means to accept the body by the force of material consciousness because you want to enjoy the world because you have a desire for sense gratification. Therefore, you have to get a material body, or you have to get you have to identify with a material body to live out your fantasies. So when Krishna appears, it's not under these laws of karma. So similarly, when liberated souls can appear in this world, it's not under the law of karma. They appear for a particular purpose. So Shukadeva Goswami was not an ordinary person. And therefore, he was already liberated within the womb. Atmarama means completely self-satisfied. He had no attraction for sense gratification. Okay. We'll continue his offering of obeisances.
Yaswanubhavam. Kila Shruti Saramekam Adyatma Deepam Atitir Shatam Tamodam Samsarinam Karnayaha Paranaguyam Tam Vyasasunam Upayami Gurum Muninam.
So he continues to offer his obeisances unto his spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami. It's his spiritual master because when the Srimad Bhagavatam was being spoken by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prickett, Suta Goswami was one of the sages there. And later he will tell the sages of Namasharanya in answer to their last question that they asked, when Krishna left the planet, where would knowledge and religion be sheltered? And he'll answer, it was the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he would say, I was there when it was spoken, and I heard it and realized it. So, that's how he accepted him as his guru. By just sitting there and listening to him speak the Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore, on that basis of just sitting there and listening to him speak the Srimad Bhagavatam, he's offering his respects to him as his spiritual master. And again, the same theme is there, that it's not that he's incapable of speaking the truth, but if he feels himself independent of Krishna and of Guru, then he's incapable. But in a mood of dependence, then he feels confident that Krishna will act through him, and he's capable of doing anything and speaking everything. So that's the devotee's mood of confidence. So we'll read this translation here. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him, Shuka, the spiritual master of all the sages, the son of Vyasadeva, who out of his great compassion for those gross materialists who struggle to cross over the darkest regions of material existence, spoke this most confidential supplement to the cream of Vedic knowledge, after having personally assimilated it by experience. So, he's offering obeisances to Sukadeva Goswami, who spoke the Bhagavatam. This was actually his greatest qualification, that he assimilated the knowledge of the Srimad Bhagavatam and he spoke the Bhagavatam. So in the purport, Prabhupada discusses the Srimad Bhagavatam and what it is. Because here in the verse, in the first line, it says, Shruti Saram. The Bhagavatam is Purana Guhyam. Purana Guhyam means a very confidential supplement to the Vedas. To not only the Vedas, but to Shruti Saram, to the cream of the Vedas. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, in this prayer, Srila Suta Goswami practically summarizes the complete introduction of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural supplementary commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. The Vedanta Sutras or the Brahma Sutras were compiled by Vyasadeva with a view to just presenting the cream of Vedic knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on this cream. Srila Shukadeva Goswami was a thoroughly realized master on the Vedanta Sutra, and consequently, he also personally realized the commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam. So we discussed a little bit before that how Vedic knowledge, how Vyasadeva made such an endeavor to make the Vedic knowledge accessible to the people of Kali Yuga. So ultimately he codified the knowledge called Vedanta Sutra, which are aphorisms or codes which express the very essence of the Vedanta. Vedanta means the end of all knowledge. It's the goal, the essence of that knowledge. And Prabhupada says this summarizes the introduction of Srimad Bhagavatam because the Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on the Vedanta. Because after Vyasadeva, the last thing that he had compiled in his strategy to deliver the Vedic knowledge to the people of Kali Yuga, the last thing was the Vedanta Sutra. He finally got the idea to codify it, but he still wasn't satisfied. And Prabhupada presents that. But Vyasadeva, being the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, could foresee the misuse of the Vedanta Sutra by unscrupulous men, and therefore he personally supplemented the Vedanta Sutra with the Bhagavad Purana. It is clearly said that this Bhagavatam is the original commentary on the Brahma Sutras. Brahma Sutra means Vedanta Sutras. So it was his commentary. It's just like in this particular verse, we read Prabhupada's purport, and then I'm trying to explain it. So this is the mood of the teacher. The mood of the teacher is to explain it. And to explain it, you have to comment on things. You have to explain it. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is Vyasadeva's compassionate explanation of the Vedanta Sutra. It's his own. And Sukadeva Goswami, who was, Srila Vyasadeva also instructed the Bhagavatam to his own son. So after he compiled the Bhagavatam to teach it and explain it, then he explained that to his own son. And Sukadeva Goswami, here it says, he swa-anubhavam. He assimilated by experience, and he realized it. Prabhupada says, Srila Sukadeva Goswami was already on the liberated stage of transcendence, Sukadeva Goswami realized it personally and then explained it. By the mercy of Sukadeva, the Bhagavat Vedanta Sutra. The Bhagavatam is the Vedanta Sutra. It's the Bhagavat Vedanta Sutra. It's the aphorisms or codes of the end of knowledge explained by him, is available for all those sincere souls who want to get out of the material existence. So the whole purpose of the Vedanta is to give knowledge for people who want to get out of the material existence. And why Sutta Goswami is glorifying Sukadeva Goswami? Because Swanubhavam, he self-assimilated, he experienced, he realized this essential knowledge because he heard it from his father, who is the author. And he became empowered to explain it. And Sutta Goswami was there when he explained it. And therefore he has so much appreciation for Sukadeva Goswami. Because by the mercy of Sukadeva Goswami's explanation of the Vedanta Sutra, the Bhagavat Vedanta Sutra, he says, out of hundreds of thousands of karmis, only a few may feel tired of material engagement and desire to get out of the labyrinth. So this is the material world. Such intelligent persons are called jnanis. Vedanta Sutra is directed to such jnanis. So when one wants to get out of the material world, then intelligent person, you're called a jnani. And the Vedanta Sutra is to give you that knowledge how to get out of the material world. But Vyasadeva, being the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, could foresee the misuse of Vedanta Sutra by unscrupulous men, and therefore he personally supplemented the Vedanta Sutra with the Bhagavad Purana. So this is the position of Sukadeva Goswami. He perfectly assimilated this knowledge. And therefore he's called Gurum Muninam. Of the Munis, of all the great sages, he was the guru. When Maharaj Prika was cursed to die and he went to the bank of the Ganga, and all the great sages were there, then Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, was put on the Vyasasan to speak the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And even his father, Vyasadeva, and Vyasadeva's guru Narada Muni was sitting there and listening. It's funny. It's almost like the disciple can almost accept the guru almost can accept the disciple as guru. Actually, real guru, real teacher, he can see guru everywhere. The principle of guru, not just the form of guru. We discussed this. The principle of guru. Dattatreya had 24 gurus. Lord Chaitanya saw the tree as his guru. Why? Trinadapi sunichaino, tororapi asishtana, amani namani. So the grass is his guru. Once you chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree. He was learning from the straw. He was learning from the tree. He saw the principle of the principle of Nityananda, the principle of Balaram. To give knowledge, and knowledge means strength. To give realization and knowledge and strength to get out of this world and to realize Krishna. So he was Gurum Muninam. He was the spiritual master of all the great sages. Now, more, he was Atmarama. Here it says in the purport, he personally realized and explained it. He was already on the liberated stage of transcendence. So what did he need to hear knowledge or speak knowledge? He was already perfect. So here it says, Karuna, what is that? Karuna, karuna, karunaya, out of causeless mercy. Because he was kind and merciful. He's also glorified in that way. So who out of his great compassion for those gross materialists who struggle to cross over the darkest region of material existence. So it's for the, you see, it's in one sense, it says gross materialist. So the word is samsarinam, those who are in samsara, those who've come to this material world. But although they've come to the material world, they want to get out. And that's why Prabhupada in the purport says, it's directed towards jnanis. The people who want to get out. Now Prabhupada in the purport in a very wonderful way describes this tama andam, the deeply dark material existence. He says there's no point in arguing that a materialistic man can be happy. No materialistic creature, be he the great Brahma or an insignificant ant, can be happy. Everyone tries to make a permanent plan for happiness, but everyone is baffled by the laws of material nature. Therefore, the materialistic world is called the darkest region of God's creation. Yet the unhappy materialist can get out of it simply by desiring to get out. I've described that many, many times. That why you can get out simply by desiring it, because your attachment to the material world and the illusion that you are in the material world is simply due to your desire to be the enjoyer, which is a position that you can't have by your constitution and therefore can only be fulfilled in dream and illusion. So it's the desire that causes the illusion and the dream and the attachment to the body and the identification with the body. So you just have to change the desire. And that's the purpose of the Bhagavatam. By hearing from Sukadeva Goswami and Srila Prabhupada, by hearing from the devotees and hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, it changes your desire. When your desire is changed, then you're no longer in the illusion of the material world. Therefore, they are compared to the camel who relishes thorny twigs because he likes the taste of the twigs mixed with blood. That is, he likes it. He wants to be there. He wants to suffer. He does not realize that it's his own blood and that it is, and that his tongue is being cut by the thorns. Similarly, to the materialist, his own blood is as sweet as honey. And although he is always harassed by his material creation, he does not wish to escape. Such materialists are called karmis. So to get out, you first have to change the desire. To not be a sense gratifier, to not suffer by drinking your own blood in the suffering of the material world. So this Bhagavatam is spoke for those who want to get out, nirmatsara namsatam, for those who are devotees. Therefore, Prabhupada says in the purport, from this introductory shloka, the beginning student should know that Srimad Bhagavatam is the only transcendental literature meant for those who are paramahamsas and completely freed from material disease called malice. But it's interesting because it's for the gross materialists. We're gross materialists, but we want to get out. And how did that desire came? It came by the mercy of the pure devotee, who are desiring to overcome. Okay. So we'll do text 4 now. Continuing the introduction by Suta Goswami, seeking the empowerment and the mercy to actually be able to present the Srimad Bhagavatam. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam mudirayet. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Narayan, unto Nara, Narayan Rishi, the supremest human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of fortune, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. The purport Prabhupada says, Suta Goswami shows the way of chanting the Puranas. In other words, to chant the Puranas, before you chant them, you have to get the mercy to do it properly. This may be followed by persons who aspire to be preachers of the Vedic literatures and the Puranas. And therefore, in ISKCON centers, this verse is sometimes chanted. Although Prabhupada didn't chant it, it is recommended here in the purport that you do. Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana and is specially meant for those who desire to get out of the material entanglement permanently. So the theme or the message is here that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the perfect means to get out of the material entanglement. And therefore, to chant and recite it, we must actually beg for mercy. So here it's Nara Narayan. He's the presiding deity of the Bhagavatam. And Saraswati is the potency of learning. And Vyas is the great sage who remembered and related it. And therefore they're offered respects. And here it says Jayam, it's the means of conquest. So what is it trying to conquest or conquer? And Prabhupada says, if he at all wants to conquer the perpetual struggle for existence, he must reestablish his eternal relationship with God. So if you want to conquer material existence, you have to establish your eternal relationship with God, because it's your desire not to be a devotee that brings you to the material world. So if you want to conquer material existence, you have to reestablish your eternal relationship with God. That's mentioned in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya daratya mameva ye papadyante maya metam taratyate. That the material energy is divine. And that material energy which is divine is following your desire not to be a devotee and to be surrendered to God. And therefore, the illusory energy is covering that fact. So if you want to conquer that material energy, which you can conquer because it's Krishna's energy, you have to mayameva papadyante mayametam tarati. You have to surrender to Krishna. You have to want to become a devotee, and you have to begin to surrender to his will. And when you change that desire, he will remove the material energy which he has sent to you to fulfill that desire to be a non-devotee. So change your desire and he'll remove the energy. All Vedic literatures and the Puranas are meant for conquering the darkest region of material existence. The living being is in the state of forgetfulness of his relationship with God due to his being overly attracted to material sense gratification from time immemorial. His struggle for existence in the material world is perpetual, and it is not possible for him to get out of it by making plans. You can't do it by your own plans, but by establishing a relationship. Okay. Well, so we'll finish here for today. And then tomorrow, if you have any questions on this. And then we'll start from verse 5. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.